Julia, welcome to the Life Scientific.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be here and to talk to you.
Well, lots and lots to talk about. Can you first sum up what you do as the chief scientist at the Met Office?
It's a big job. First of all, I have 500 scientists who work for me, and it's my job to direct them in the science they do, to make sure that the Met Office in both weather and climate is fit for purpose in 5 years' time, that we've done the right research, we've developed better forecasts, we've developed better predictions. It's a huge science programme with a very big budget, and it's world class. It's my job to make sure it stays like that.
Can you give a quick definition of what the difference is between weather and climate?
Well, weather is what you experience day to day, and it's what we forecast day to day in what we call a very, not deterministic, but certainly we have a pretty clear idea for the next few days ahead how the weather's going to shape up at any place and at any time. And when you talk about climate, you're really talking about the amalgamation of weather, the statistics of weather. So it's the average of the weather that we experience. And so when we make climate predictions, of course, we can't say on any particular day or any particular place what the weather is going to be like. But we can say what the probability is of the sort of weather we're going to experience, say, in a month's time, next year. And of course, for climate change, it's all about, will our weather be the same in 50 years' time as the sort of weather we're used to living with today?
Can you tell us, Julia Slinger, when it was you think your fascination in meteorology first began?
I think really it must have begun when I was at school, and I spent a lot of time sitting at my desk in my bedroom looking out of the window, supposed to be thinking about A-level physics, but looking at the sky and wondering about the clouds, but almost particularly wondering, why did the winds always blow from the west? Because it's not obvious why the wind should always blow from the west in our latitudes. Mm. And when I went on to read physics at university, I realised that what I liked best were the sort of being able to see physics at work, in a sense, in things I could see in my everyday life. So I wasn't terribly drawn by particle physics and that sort of more theoretical physics. And I thought, well, I need to do something that's practical physics that I can see in action. And immediately the thought came, well, I know what I want to do. I want to study the weather.
And how then did you begin your career as a research meteorologist?
Well, I was due to go actually to do a master's at Imperial College to learn meteorology. And at the same time, I had applied to the Met Office for a job as a scientist and was successful. And when I went back to Imperial and said, you know what, I've got this job at the Met Office, and they said, oh, you should take that, they're like gold dust. And so I joined a cohort of 20 or so that came in that year. And then I was fortunate to be moved after my 6 months being trained into a research post in climate, which was, I guess, the beginning of my career, really.
Was it an exciting time for developments in climate research and weather forecasting?
Oh, yes. I mean, when I entered the Met Office in the early 70s, we'd barely seen a satellite image. We didn't know what clouds looked like from space, for example. We were just getting our first computers. We were absolutely at the vanguard of developing the first climate models alongside them. I mean, the Americans had led the way in the 60s. But we did some groundbreaking modelling of the Atlantic African climate as part of a big field experiment in 74. And looking back, the science I was doing then was absolutely amazing, what we were able to do and the insights we were getting, bearing in mind that we knew virtually nothing really about how the climate system works, how energies move around the system. We forget that.
This was also a time and the place where you met your husband Tony, who would then become a distinguished climate scientist himself.
That's right.
And I guess you both worked together. You carried out research jointly.
Well, not until, later on. He was flying around in aeroplanes and doing some amazing work on the interaction of the radiation field with clouds and things like that. So he was very much at the very detailed end of things, and I was very much working at the global end of things. But it was all about how does radiation, solar and terrestrial infrared radiation, move around the system. absolutely fascinating that we were working together and obviously talking about it over dinner every night.
Which would you say has been the greater motivation for you, your belief in the value of your research to wider society or the intellectual quest to, you know, to better understand the nature of the Earth's climate and weather?
I think it's been a bit of both, really. I always go back to a wonderful quote from Francis Bacon, who talks about why we do science. And at the end of it, he does say, knowledge is the rich storehouse for the glory of the Creator. And I think that's what, of course, drives most scientists, is this gathering of knowledge about this creation that we have. But then he says, and the relief of man's estate. And it's the relief of man's estate that I think more and more has become important to me, and is why, in the end, I applied to become the Met Office chief scientist after many years in academia, because I needed to see my science working for society, for the relief of man's estate, to save lives and livelihoods, to make life better for people who are affected badly by hazardous weather, climate extremes.
Julia, welcome to The Life Scientific.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be here and to talk to you.
Well, lots and lots to talk about. Can you first sum up what you do as the chief scientist at the Met Office?
It's a big job. First of all, I have 500 scientists who work for me, and it's my job to direct them in the science they do, to make sure that the Met Office in both weather and climate is fit for purpose in 5 years' time, that we've done the right research, we've developed better forecasts, we've developed better predictions. It's a huge science programme with a very big budget, and it's world class. It's my job to make sure it stays like that.
Can you give a quick definition of what the difference is between weather and climate?
Well, weather is what you experience day to day, and it's what we forecast day to day in what we call a very, not deterministic, but certainly we have a pretty clear idea for the next few days ahead how the weather's going to shape up at any place and at any time. And when you talk about climate, you're really talking about the amalgamation of weather, the statistics of weather. So it's the average of the weather that we experience. And so when we make climate predictions, of course, we can't say on any particular day or any particular place what the weather is going to be like. But we can say what the probability is of the sort of weather we're going to experience, say, in a month's time, next year. And of course, for climate change, it's all about, will our weather be the same in 50 years' time as the sort of weather we're used to living with today?
Can you tell us, Julia Slinger, when it was you think your fascination in meteorology first began?
I think really it must have begun when I was at school, and I spent a lot of time sitting at my desk in my bedroom looking out of the window, supposed to be thinking about A-level physics, but looking at the sky and wondering about the clouds, but almost particularly wondering, why did the winds always blow from the west? Because it's not obvious why the wind should always blow from the west in our latitudes. And when I went on to read physics at university, I realised that what I liked best were the sort of being able to see physics at work, in a sense, in things I could see in my everyday life. So I wasn't terribly drawn by particle physics and that sort of more theoretical physics. And I thought, well, I need to do something that's practical physics that I can see in action. And immediately the thought came, well, I know what I want to do. I want to study the weather.
And how then did you begin your career as a research meteorologist?
Well, I was due to go actually to do a master's at Imperial College to learn meteorology. And at the same time, I had applied to the Met Office for a job as a scientist and was successful. And when I went back to Imperial and said, you know what, I've got this job at the Met Office, and they said, oh, you should take that, they're like gold dust. And so I joined a cohort of 20 or so that came in that year. And then I was fortunate to be moved after my 6 months being trained into a research post in climate, which was, I guess, the beginning of my career, really.
Was it an exciting time for developments in climate research and weather forecasting?
Oh, yes. I mean, when I entered the Met Office in the early 70s, we'd barely seen a satellite image. We didn't know what clouds looked like from space, for example. We were just getting our first computers. We were absolutely at the vanguard of developing the first climate models alongside them. And the Americans had led the way in the 60s. But we did some groundbreaking modelling of the Atlantic African climate as part of a big field experiment in 74. And looking back, the science I was doing then was absolutely amazing, what we were able to do and the insights we were getting, bearing in mind that we knew virtually nothing really about how the climate system works, how energies move around the system. We forget that.
This was also a time and the place where you met your husband, Tony, who would then become a distinguished climate scientist himself.
That's right.
And I guess you both worked together. You carried out research jointly.
Well, not until later on. He was flying around in aeroplanes and doing some amazing work on the interaction of the radiation field with clouds and things like that. So he was very much at the very detailed end of things, and I was very much working at the global end of things. But it was all about how does radiation, solar and terrestrial infrared radiation, move around the system. Absolutely fascinating that we were working together and obviously talking about it over dinner every night.
Which would you say has been the greater motivation for you, your belief in the value of your research to wider society or the intellectual quest to, you know, to better understand the nature of the Earth's climate and weather?
I think it's been a bit of both, really. I always go back to a wonderful quote from Francis Bacon, who talks about why we do science. And at the end of it, he does say knowledge is the rich storehouse for the glory of the Creator. And I think that's what, of course, drives most scientists, is this gathering of knowledge about this creation that we have. But then he says, and the relief of man's estate. And it's the relief of man's estate that I think more and more has become important to me, and is why, in the end, I applied to become the Met Office chief scientist after many years in academia, because I needed to see my science working for society, for the relief of man's estate, to save lives and livelihoods, to make life better for people who are affected badly by hazardous weather, climate extremes.